You're listening to EG. I'm Pui Guan Man, senior reporter.
And I'm James Child, head of retail and industrial research.
And in today's retail special, we will be looking at who owns the high street. James, you've been combing our database to find out what sorts of landlords own the buildings in the UK's busiest high streets. Isn't that right?
I have, yes. We've done a very in-depth and thorough investigation over the past couple of months, looking at exactly who are the largest owners of commercial real estate in retail in the UK. We've looked at 22 of the UK's busiest high streets in 11 of the biggest cities, actually identifying the ownership of around 3,000 different retail buildings, which has been some hell of a job.
Phew, yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And so what have you found?
Unsurprisingly, around 20% of all of those properties are owned by, you know, traditional REITs and PropCos, which isn't surprising because they are the biggest property owners in the UK. Perhaps most surprising, and has been reflective of this study, is that 17.3% of the owners are from overseas, and they come in second place in the rankings of proportional percentage, and actually come ahead of domestic local councils, who are in third place, which we thought was very interesting.
So what sorts of countries do these investors come from?
Broadly speaking, a lot of the investors come from the United States. Mm-hmm. We've also seen a lot of activity from Europe as well, so in particular from Germany and Spain, but also quite a bit of Chinese money coming in, and money from Canada too. So quite a broad church in terms of where the money is actually coming from.
Interesting. What sorts of opportunities do you reckon these overseas investors have spotted in retail, and in particular high street retail?
Well, I mean, retail hasn't been out of the news, has it? There are still opportunities out there. And when you think about overseas investors coming over to this country and looking at where the prime and most premium destinations still are. So many of the streets and the thoroughfares that we looked at in this study, like Oxford Street, Bond Street in London, Prince's Street in Edinburgh, and others like Deansgate in Manchester, they're always going to retain, you know, a special historical place in the market. They're always going to be the destinations that tourists want to go to, and actually lots of people working and around in. So that's where we've seen the money coming in over the past few years, and we might expect to see that continue.
Nice. I mean, what sorts of buildings are they acquiring? Is there any sort of discernible pattern in terms of the types of tenants they're looking for and that sort of thing?
Good question. I think that many of the assets that they're leaning into are predominantly where you have maybe 3, 4, 5 retail units on the ground floor, and then that's supplemented by either residential or office premises above. So what that does is that, you know, strengthens any investment covenant that investors are looking at, and, you know, spreads the, what's the phrase I'm looking for? The risk. Spreads the risk of the, that's the one, thank you. across the assets. So if you are an investor, you are looking for a good opportunity. You're looking for something that's going to offer a stable yield return. And you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. And in terms of your second question, which was
tenant mix.
So tenant mix is a bit of a funny one at the moment. You know, historically there may have been a particular sector that they may have looked to, maybe fashion, maybe department stores. But as we all know, you know, all those old rules have gone out the window. So I think at the moment you'd be looking for a prime destination and a good return over who is in that building, because we know that retail leases have been tumbling for years. They're getting shorter by the day, and indeed even in the office environment that's happening as well. So tenants aren't quite the draw the building is the draw and the destination is the draw.
Mm. Do you imagine some of these landlords might wish they could turn back time almost, you know, what with everything happening in UK retail currently? Or do you think that, you know, investment's going to keep coming in so long as returns look a bit better than they do domestically?
I think, yes, great question. I think that when you, when you look at the particular destinations we looked at for this research, certainly we're going to expect to see, you know, overseas investment continue. Because as I said, these are places that people are going to come to for years and years and years. It's not like a shopping mall that, you know, may or may not become redundant in 20 years' time. You know, these are places that are always going to be in a fixture of people's minds and imaginations. So it has slowed down across the board, but in terms of investment, but it, you know, it certainly will remain and probably pick up in the future as well.
Out of the cities that we covered in our research, which UK cities have had the highest levels of overseas investment in their high streets?
Well, there are four cities that have that all have over 20% of the units that we looked at being owned by overseas investors. They are Birmingham, which we looked at New Street in Birmingham, Edinburgh, which we analysed Prince's Street, which is the main retail thoroughfare there, and Nottingham and Cardiff as well. Conversely, there were other destinations like Bristol and also Bath that were both predominantly owned by the local councils. So, you know, a different kind of mix-up in that respect in the data and analysis.
So why are investors choosing to choosing the likes of Birmingham over other cities?
Well, it's really interesting, actually, because when you actually drill down into the numbers, you find that London doesn't feature in the top you know, the top four cities in terms of overseas investment, which we all found very surprising. And it's actually really good and reflective, because it seems like investors aren't scared to spend their money in other cities and regions outside of London, which is, you know, which is great news.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. And so you, just to come back to an earlier point that you were making, I mean, it does seem like there's, you know, clear evidence that ownership of the high street is quite fragmented by the sounds of it. I mean, how much of the high street's problems are to blame on this? Do you think more unity could provide the solution to regenerating high street destinations?
I think that what this study and investigation has really thrown up is just how fragmented it really is. One of the, you know, the, I guess that the big story is the amount of overseas investment we've seen, but when you actually break it down, there's about another 9 different sectors and categories of ownership. So that gives you a kind of an indicator of just exactly how many forces are at play in the retail sector in terms of, you know, who actually owns stuff. Now, this isn't normally an issue, but it has become and it will become an issue when you've got a line of 10 shops. One high street is owned by someone who is a private individual. Number two is someone who's from the other side of the world. Number three is a pension. Number four is a foreign bank, you know. Yeah. And when you're a local council or a bid or someone who's invested into a destination or a high street or a town center, whatever it is, trying to formulate firstly and then roll out plans for a central idea can be very, very difficult. And it's these fears of, you know, of fragmentation that I think of. They aren't the reason for the perils on the high street, but they will be something that isn't going to help the situation going forward.
Yeah, I mean, certainly some councillors and agents that, you know, I've spoken to in the past have expressed that multiple ownerships and landlords competing for tenants have hampered the potential for sort of positive long-term results, on the high street. I can kind of see where they're coming from. I mean, you know, there have been a few like Winchester City Council, from memory, is making the effort to sort of buy up shops on its high street needed for its regeneration. But I don't imagine that many is going to have the firepower to do so or will want to take the risk.
I mean, local councils, we all know, have been very proactive in terms of acquisitions, even on the high street. Since 2013, they've spent around £5 billion overall on commercial real estate.
Real.
1.6 billion of that coming in the retail and leisure sector. We have seen, you know, they have made some positive gains in terms of regional centres and, you know, town centre high streets.
Yeah.
And that story's been well told. That there are pros and cons. But having a unified approach will, you know, certainly help any high street that isn't doing too well.
Yeah, yeah. What are some of the ideas that are being sort of floated around? I mean, you know, sometimes you hear about, you know, making purchases compulsory being one thing, for example, or, you know, maybe even the idea of creating an investment vehicle for the high street with multiple owners, you know, having a say in creating a consistent message. What are your thoughts?
It's a very tricky one. You cannot force people to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Local authorities obviously they're in the best place to talk to everybody at once. They can talk to tenants, they can talk to the people that live in that area, they can talk to the landlords and find out exactly what it is that people want and help businesses in that area make the right decisions to deliver opportunities that are wanted and needed. You know, the private sector has a massive role to play in this for sure. Because obviously they've got wealth and breadth of expertise going, you know, across all different sectors, and it's not just shops. It's also about offices. It's about homes as well. So we need to really think about how we unify that approach to really solve this issue that's kind of hiding behind the curtain, which is fragmentation.
Yeah.
And there's no easy way around it. But if you do look at some examples up and down the country that have done it quite well, include up in Stockton, they've done that really well, that unified and linked together approach, if you will, of looking at what it is people need and want and going out and making that change. And again, CPOs is another thing you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that they're a force for good. Some people will probably disagree with me. But if a shop has been standing empty for 3 years, 4 years, 5, 10 years, then it, you know, isn't it a responsibility of someone to go in and, you know, sort it out?
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
You know, I understand where other people will sit on the other side of the fence and have a completely different argument. So,
how do you see the overall composition changing in future when it comes to ownership on the high street? I mean, do you think local authority spending, for example, will continue to rise as rapidly as it has?
I think that local authority spend will continue, but it won't be as strong as it has been over the past few years. We've seen fairly insane levels of spend since 2013. Just to mirror that, if you went back before then, back to 2012, authority spend was zero, so it's come from nowhere. Now, obviously, the Public Loans Work Board has changed us. Also, we know that public sentiment isn't there for a lot of council spend on shopping centres and offices. You know, the old adage is like, why aren't you fixing my potholes, but you've got money to buy a shopping centre, for example, you know. So I think that spend is there, but it has to be in the right place, and it will continue, but it will be balanced against a bounce back in the rest of the investment sector, I feel.
So what was the most interesting city for you to look at as a researcher?
Well, I think what was what actually stuck out was when we looked at Bristol and Bath as well, they were both two cities that were predominantly owned by the council. So if you look at, I think it's Horse Fair in Bristol, around Cabot Circus areas, almost like 90% ownership by Bristol City Council.
Right.
And similarly in Bath as well, you've got Stool Street, I think, which is where all the historical Roman baths are. And obviously they're listed sites, so they're owned by the council as well. So the overseas investors can't get to those, it seems. But that was a bit of an interesting data nugget that we found in all the reams of data that we had to analyse.
Yes, it's one of the many gems that the retail team here have to offer.
Exactly.
So one final question for you, James. Who do you think should own the high street?
I think that there should be a very clear focus on looking at each high street and town centre in isolation, be that through a local council or a bid or a collection of people who are invested in that particular destination, to go in, look at each high street on its own and decide who should own it. And what, I mean, my personal preference is local councils. I think the councils have got a massive job, and they, you know, they should be the ones going in and investing and, you know, talking to the people that live there and, you know, maybe making making allowances for what they want and need.
It's very lefty of you.
It is a bit. But as I said previously, there certainly is room for, you know, for private investment as well. And we know that local councils will always need a hand when it comes to these sorts of, you know, massive projects, which they can be. So yeah, councils go in, buy it up, and then get help from other places. That would be my top tip.
Well, hey, no disagreement from me. So all in all, a fragmented high street that could well have exacerbated the numerous problems we've seen on the high street. And while this continues, foreign investment may yet still prove to be a major driving force behind our high street destinations. Equally, local authority spending looks likely to continue, although, you know, probably at a slower pace. Thank you. As I'm sure you'd agree, that's given us plenty to digest. Tune in next time for more insights into the retail sector.